This afternoon, I'm going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to preach a sermon. Sometimes people make the distinction between a homily and a sermon. I don't know if that's an objective distinction, but a homily is understood much more on the readings and the theme of the Mass. A sermon can be a self-contained talk on any subject that is relevant to the people of that time and in that situation. So today, I'm going to talk to you about a question that comes up fairly often, probably not asked outright, but asked enough, implicitly. And the question is, why am I a Catholic? And so what I'd like to spend time this afternoon is sharing with you five reasons why I love to be Catholic. Okay, and I really mean that. I absolutely love being Catholic. So, let's get started. The first green. Okay, Catholic, the best of five choices. So, what's number one? Now, all of these choices that all of us have to make are choices that I'm talking about that are made by a serious person. Now, what do I mean by a serious person? When I was a teenager, I was not serious. I went to church. Mom dragged me along. But I really, you know, if you would have told me this, I would say, oh, yeah, there's a God. Yeah, whatever. And then I would go and do whatever the heck I wanted to do. Okay. That is not a serious person. And that's okay. When you're a kid, you're not supposed to be serious yet. A serious person is a person who's not making just decisions based on their emotions. It's the person who is making a decision, and the decision is going to have consequences in their lives. And so these are not lightly made decisions. So the first decision, the first thing you have to, go to the first one. Hello? The first decision you have to decide on is this. Is there a God or not? That's it. Do you believe in God or do you not? Now, I personally believe in God. And the reason, first and foremost, is that I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. And I mean that. I don't have enough faith not to believe in God, because not to believe in God would cause me more faith and suspension of my reason than to believe in God. Let me give you an explanation or an example. I want you to imagine you got a guy standing there, and he's got a shoebox full, not full, about halfway full of dirt. Now this guy is shaking the shoebox. Two other guys are watching him. And one of the two guys that are watching him says, if you continue shaking that box in an infinite number of shakings, a watch will come out of it. Infinite shakings, a watch will come out of it. And the second guy looks at him and says, I don't care how many times you shake that box. No watch is ever going to come out of it. What you need is somebody to extract the metals and to make sure that out of those metals, parts are designed that fit together and have a purpose for a watch, a designer, and an assembler. Now, you got two people with two opinions. Both of them are inferring how a watch will come together. Neither of them can prove it. Neither. And so what I'm asking you to do is, as a third party who is watching, which inference, which presumption has the more chance and is the more reasonable to be true? Now, when I look at it, thinking that if an infinite number of shakings will bring that watch together, I don't buy it. I don't care how long you shake that dirt. I believe that my inference that there's got to be somebody to extract metal and to shape it and to conceive a watch and put it together, I think that that's more likely than the other one. And so therefore, I believe in a creator. I believe in some intelligent force that is greater than us. Now, if you're an atheist, which is one of the other choice, you basically have to say, this is came about just because it's always been there, and it just came about because the universal box got shaken, so we got this today. And if you want to believe that, that's fine. I disagree with you, and I think your reasoning leaves a lot to be desired, but we can agree to disagree and not be disagreeable. Okay? So the very first thing you've got to do is you've got to decide. Now, notice I'm not saying about who is God and what kind of God it is. All I'm saying is there is a power greater than humanity. That's all. That's all. And that's the first decision you have to make. So, what's number two? Number two is, then if you decide, well, there must be a God, then you've got to decide, well, we got a category called God. Now, remember, the word God is a perfectly good pagan word. Gods existed way before Israel, way before any kind of historical record. God is just a three-letter word for something greater than us, something that created us and created the universe, that gave order to the universe. That's all it is. So the question is, well, is there one God or are there many gods? Because now today we don't have that temptation to believe that there's a lot of gods, okay? But sometimes, you know, some religions are interpreted that way. For example, Hinduism. If you're a Hindu, Hindus believe that, ultimately they would believe that there is one God, I think. But they would believe that there are many what's called avatars of God. There are many incarnations of God. That God came into the world infinite numbers of times. And different Hindu texts and sects worship different Hindu incarnations. There's Vishnu, there's Shiva, Brahman. I mean, it goes on and on with literally thousands of gods. But they still kind of believe in one God. But for me, it doesn't seem right. It feels like there's one God, and even they understand that. And so that's not much of an issue these days. And so I am a monotheist, one God. Polytheist, many gods. So I am a monotheist. So far, I have chosen between being an atheist or being a theist, believing in God or not, and I have chosen that there is one God instead of many gods. So, what's number three? Now, this next one is an interesting one. You got to choose between what's called pantheism and personal theism. Now, what's that? What's pantheism? Pantheism is the belief that the universe is actually God. That everything in the world, in the universe, is part of God. Okay? Now, I don't know, for example, if any of you remember some time ago, there was a movie called Avatar. And in Avatar, the universe was divinized. It was actually God. And there are people today, very strong, that worship the earth. They give it the name Gaia. And they have rituals and worship services that worship the universe and pantheism. If any of you ever read, for example, there was a book craze several years ago called The Secret. And if you remember The Secret basically says you are God because you're part of the universe. And when you're part of the universe, you are the universe becoming conscious of itself. And you are part of the consciousness of God because God is the universe. It's also kind of a little bit like Star Wars. In Star Wars, the Force. Now, you notice the Force is not a personal being. You can just sort of plug into it. Okay? It's kind of like an electric magnetic field or something like that. But it's not personal. It can be co-opted by anybody. And so it's a kind of a version of what's called pantheism. So what is the opposite? Or one of the opposites, personal theism. Personal theism says, I believe that there's a God, but I really have to believe that if there is a God, and I believe there is, and I believe there's only one, that I think he's more like humans than unlike. Now, what's my reasoning for this? I really believe that among the creation of God, humans show the highest evolution, without even going into a soul yet, but highest evolution of self-consciousness. I have the ability to make moral choices. I have the ability to decide different courses of action. I know something that animals don't know. I'm going to die. Animals don't know they're going to die. I can choose whom to love, and I can choose not to act on my instincts. And so when I see some of these qualities in me, I go, somebody lesser than me couldn't have made me. It had to be, the creator had to be someone who probably has a person somewhat like me, and is able to create someone like me. And so, even though I don't understand this person, I believe that there's a personal God. And so, yeah, I'll go with that. To me, that's the better answer. And so all of a sudden I believe in God, I believe he's one, and I believe he's a person. He's a person. So let's go to number 4. Now, the next one is a bit trickier because now this is like a funnel. Okay, the deeper down you get, the narrower the decisions become. Now, since I already believe that there's a God, and I believe there's one God, not polytheism, and I believe that God is personal, then the next choice I have to make is, okay, out of the religious traditions that understand that there's a God and he's personal, there's two types of personal gods. There is the Trinitarian or the Christian tradition, or you have the monist tradition. And what is monist? Monist means one. Now, we as Christians believe that there's one God. But for us, it's three persons in one God. And so now I've got to decide, okay, do I believe, like the Jews or like the Muslims, that there is one God? Because remember, the Muslims and the Jews, well, in this case, the Muslim, consider us Christians heretics because we think that there's three persons in one God. So you have to either believe in a monist or a Trinitarian. Here's why I don't believe in the monist. To me, the monist doesn't make a lot of sense yet because I find the Trinitarian argument more convincing. Here's why. Whoever made me didn't just make me. He made you. He made us. Now, when I look inside of me and inside of being human, I find that I have several needs that cannot be ignored. I have the need to love and to be loved. I have the need to be with other people in common union with them. If I don't have something like that, I get lonely. And so it's part of my constitution to live not by myself, but in common union with others. And listen to that word. Common union comes down to communion. Common union with others. And not even that. When I look at my own body, I am male. You come to realize that no one of us is a complete human being. We're not. A complete human being would have to be both male and female. And notice, we are made incomplete. And we're supposed to find the completeness in each other. And as I start evaluating more and more the qualities of a human person, I start seeing echoes of that in what Jesus revealed, that God is one, but that he is three persons in one God, and that what unites them is love. If you're going to have a God who is love, a God who is love has to have... Who's he going to love? Hey, who's he going to love? Love is not, well, I'm just going to, I guess God could look at himself and say, I love myself. But in order to love, you got to love another. And in the Trinitarian gospel, or the understanding, Jesus reveals, because this is the one who told us about that, Jesus reveals that in God, there's three persons. You know, if you look at the Gospels, the word Trinity is never used in the Gospels. But that's a name we used later. But in the Gospels, Jesus is constantly talking about and talking to his Father. Now, if he's talking to his Father, if God is one, what's he doing? Is he talking to himself and making believe he's like he's somebody else? Or maybe he is actually talking to somebody else. That's the Father. But at the same time, do you remember when one of the apostles says, okay, Jesus, show us the Father, and then we'll be pleased. And Jesus turns to him and says, have I been with you for so long, and you still do not know me? All of a sudden you get this, wait a minute. So you're the Father, but you're not. And the answer is, that's correct. He is three persons, because later on, he begins to say, and I will send you another, the Holy Spirit. And all of a sudden, what Christian tradition did in those first years, you got to imagine the Jews, because all the first Christians were Jews. These guys must have been super confused, because here they believe in one God, and as Jesus is talking to his Father and then sending the Holy Spirit, and they're going, what's going on here? Because there is one God, but there's three, but there's one, but there's three, but there's one, but there's three. And they're going around in circles. And then they figure it out. Ah, It's one God in three persons.
To me, that makes sense. Why? Because we are one human family and we long to be together. And that's what God is. God is a community of persons in one being. That's the Trinity. When I look at that reality, the way I imagine it, I see, now it makes sense when we say, I'm made in the image and likeness of God. Doesn't mean me by myself. It means me together with you. We need each other. So I choose to be Trinitarian because it makes more sense to me than monist. And then the fifth one. Hello? Catholic or Protestant? Now, this is the narrowest point. Why do I choose to be specifically Catholic? Now, I want you to remember this. Periodically, people are going to come up to you and say, are you Catholic or are you a Christian? I always want to say, let me just ask you a question. Am I bald or am I a man? Am I a bald or am I a man? Well, I'm a bald man. Okay? I could have used fat and man, but bald's better. Okay? If I am bald and I am a man, I'm both. That's a false choice. Because bald is an adjective and man is a noun. And so I am a Catholic Christian. That's one's an adjective, Catholic, and a Christian is the noun. Now, why am I a Catholic? There's lots of reasons, but, you know, I'm already accused of having long homilies. So I can't go into all of them. So let me give you two or three. Number one, I really believe Jesus. You know, the reason I am a Christian is because every time I read the Gospels, when I read about what Jesus says, it's an echo in my soul, in myself. I hear the words of Jesus, and I want to say, I feel like that. The biggest one I find is when in the Bible, when the apostles basically ask Jesus, why did you come? Why did you come into this world? And Jesus answers it directly. He says, I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. Now, just take that answer. What does that imply? It implies that you don't have life in its fullness. That you have life in the half or in the quarter. Now, what does having life in the half or in the quarter mean? Look, I'm 68 years old. I have found out long ago, but it's even deeper now, is that to a large degree, life is a tease. Now, I don't know if you guys know this, but a tease is a person who kind of lets you think, you're going to get something, and ultimately, get stores do that, people do that to each other, you know, that we tease, but then you withdraw. When I was young, I thought, life, it's all ahead of me. I'm going to get it, you know, I'm going to be super happy. And I'm going to have a good-looking wife, and I'm going to have lots of money, and I knew I was going to make it. It don't happen. It doesn't happen. I mean, you can achieve some happiness, but even if the happiest that you ever are, you're still going to ask the question, is that all there is? There's got to be more. There's always got to be more. And so my experience of life is that you're never full. You're always wanting. And so to me, that response from Jesus makes total, total sense. So what else? I'm Catholic because I trust Jesus and because Jesus looked at Peter and he said to Peter, Peter, you are the rock, and on top of you I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. I give you the keys to the kingdom of God. Whatever you shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. Whatever you shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Now, why is that important to me? First of all, somebody's got to be in charge. Somebody's got to be. Have you ever been in a group where no one's in charge? It's chaos. No one, everybody's doing their own thing. I understand, you know how I understand the structure of the Catholic Church? The bishops and the Pope and all that kind of stuff. I understand it like the skeleton of a body. Now, I want you to think about this. What would your body be if you had no skeleton? If you had no skeleton, your body would be like goo, right? No shape. Now, the skeleton is not the prettiest part of the body. As a matter of fact, if your skeleton is showing, go to the doctor. Okay? Immediately go to the doctor. Because the skeleton's not supposed to show. But the skeleton gives a body shape. It allows you to interact with the world. It allows you to do stuff without a big blob that just sort of goes everywhere. The hierarchy that Jesus, notice that Jesus doesn't just gather a group of people and says, okay, I'm giving you all my writing. Everybody take a Bible here. Everybody take a Bible and you all do what you want and you interpret it the way you want. Jesus is very careful to say, okay, Peter, I'm putting you in charge and these are my 12 and you guys rule over the church. And he gave the authority to Peter to do it. That makes sense to me. And when people have broken away, they keep breaking and breaking. Do you know how many Protestant denominations there are? Around 30,000 Protestant denominations. It don't make sense. Jesus said we should be one. So the third reason. I'm going to give you four. The third reason, the Eucharist. I really understand that the fullness of Jesus is present to us. Every time in the resurrection, Jesus, it says that Jesus was made known to them when? In the breaking of the bread. He said that he would be. He said, I am with you at the breaking of the bread. Do this, and Jesus said it. He said, do this in memory of me. Now, I'm always amazed when people say, well, I follow Jesus, but I don't go to church. Well, you must not follow him very closely, because the dude told you to do this. Okay, and if you don't do this, you're evidently not following Jesus very closely. I guess you can follow parts of it. So to me, it makes sense. To the Eucharist and the presence of Christ make sense. And then the last one. I may give you one more after that. But the last one is, I really believe that the Catholic Church is the fullness of what Jesus intended there to be. Now, I'm not saying we're good at everything we do. Let me just give you the quick example of Joel Osteen. Okay? I like Joel. Okay, I think he's a great preacher. I've learned a lot from him. But Joel has a slice of the pie. And he does that slice of the pie better than anybody I've ever heard. That little, let's say the strawberry slice of the pie. So if you want just strawberry, go to Joel. He'll give you great strawberry. But he doesn't have the rest of the pie. He's missing the rest of the pie. I believe the Catholic Church has the whole pie. But if you taste the way we drew strawberry, not so good. Not as good as Joel does it. So what's my job? I got to go check out his recipe. I got to check out the way he's doing it. But that doesn't mean that he's got the rest of the pie. So every time you come to church, to the Catholic Church, you're never going to find that we do everything better than any other church. But I'm guaranteeing you we got the whole pie. Okay, we got to learn how to do it better. And then the last thing. The Catholic Church wants you to use your head. Wants you to think. Reason. God gave you reason. He is reason. God himself, Logos, in the Gospel of John, it says in the beginning there was the Word. The word Word there is the word Logos in Greek. And the word Logos in Greek means not just the word Word, but meaning, purpose, and reason. And so you could translate by saying, in the beginning there was reason. You and I are supposed to think. We're supposed to ask questions about your faith. If anybody ever says, shut up and just believe it, that is anti-Catholic. As a matter of fact, it's called a heresy. It's called pietism. Okay? You're supposed to use your head to find questions and to find answers. You know, when I was in the seminary, I never saw a guy get kicked out of the seminary for asking questions. I saw guys get kicked out of the seminary for not asking questions, for wanting people to shut up and just believe. St. John Paul II used to say, religion, true religion, rises towards God like an eagle on two wings, the wing of faith and the wing of reason. And so, there you have it. Theism or atheism? Monotheism or polytheism? Personal theism or pantheism? Trinitarian or monist? Catholic or Protestant? That's why I'm a Catholic. Those are the basic decisions that have ultimately led me to still say, I absolutely love being Catholic. Thanks for listening.